Leinster Rugby are the first of eight quarter-finalists in this season's European Rugby Champions Cup. The Irish side's big win over Glasgow Warriors sees them through with a game to spare, but it's all to play for elsewhere after defeats for the other teams that led their pools going into round five. We'll hear from Ken Owens, Todd Blackadder, Di Young and John Kingston, as well as the former Saracens, Toulouse and France star Thomas Castagnier. Former All Black Carl Heyman talks Toulon, and Mike McCarthy joins us to analyse Leinster's impressive campaign. And there's a Champions Cup Q&A with Stuart Hogg. That's all to come on the EPCR European Rugby Show. Well, welcome to Show 6, ahead of the final round of pool stage matches. Here are the cold, hard numbers. 20 become 8 this weekend. Just one team are through to the quarterfinals already, that's Leinster. And 14 teams are still fighting for those other 7 knockout stage berths. It's James Burridge alongside ChampionsCupRugby.com's Emma Thurston. You're delergified, Emma.
I have a voice.
You have a voice.
So this is good for when it comes to a podcast.
Always a good start to have a voice. Someone who's got a voice... Tom May, never shy of one, formerly of Northampton, Toulon, Newcastle and England. Matey, great to have you back.
Thank you very much.
The weekend just gone was the one where the tournament took off.
Yes, yeah, some amazing results, some fantastic games and some incredible finishes, I think. Some of the tries we saw were fantastic and I guess set up round six perfectly because this weekend's going to be monstrous.
There's just so much to play for still this weekend and... especially Saturday, I think. A lot of the results on Saturday, you wouldn't necessarily have been able to predict. And then Scarlett's performance on Friday night was something else. So it was a great weekend. And I think round six will be even better based on the fact that there's so much still to play for.
It set the tone, didn't it? Now, if you're a fan of the Champions Cup, you would probably have got a list of permutations in front of you. A lot of people have been doing it.
You need to be good at maths.
The newspapers have been doing it. But give us a flavour, Tom, of a club right now. A head coach, a player... are you looking at a list of clubs which currently are in the top eight places? Come Saturday, Sunday, do you watch social media? Do you have a manager or someone keeping across what's going on elsewhere? Or do you just focus on your own game?
Look, I think the management and the coaches have to be aware of every permutation, of where the other important fixtures lie. Look what happened to Clermont a few years ago. They got that completely and utterly horribly wrong. As a player, you can't manage anything to do with that. That is just... extra rubbish that's floating around your mind when actually the task at hand is really the most important one. So yes, do your analysis on the game just passed and preview all of the games and the players coming up and how they've performed in recent games, but don't get distracted by anything else. The day-to-day stuff that you do on a weekly basis is what builds into a big performance.
And of course, Emma, if teams are tied, it comes down to the matches when they've played each other. They're head-to-heads, doesn't it? We should clarify that.
Yeah, it does. So if two clubs are equal on match points at the end of the pool stage, then their ranking is determined by the results of the matches played between those clubs. So there's a little bit more maths for all of us to do. Look back between those head-to-heads, and we're certainly getting our calculators out.
And social media was on fire. I think particularly Friday night, the Matt Banahan try, the leap into the air from Banahan. I think I've seen that. And the try, that Scarlett's first try, suddenly social media went mild.
It was incredible. And then you had Ollie Woodburn's for Exeter Chiefs. We're at Champions Cup and at ER Challenge Cup if you want to get involved in the discussion. And obviously on Facebook too, European Rugby Champions Cup and European Rugby Challenge Cup.
We asked you to let us know which quarterfinal matchups you'd like to see in the Champions Cup. Emma?
Michael says Leinster versus Saracens. Get the holders into Dublin and let's see how good they are. Saracens have still obviously got a bit of work to do. And Inud says Leinster versus Racing 92 so we can see Sexton versus Carter. Thank you for all your responses and we'll read some more out a little later on in the show.
Well, next we'll look back on round five's matches and preview a crucial final weekend of pool stage rugby.
I'm Dylan Hartley. You're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
Let's start in Pool 3 then, a section that has already been won by Leinster, who scored 8 tries against an understrength Glasgow Warriors to win 55 points to 19 and seal a home quarter final. And then Exeter breathed life into their Champions Cup campaign with a dominant 41-10 win over Montpellier at Sandy Park. And so Pool 3 looks like this. Leinster already through, as I said, with 23 points. Exeter in second on 14. Montpellier with 13. Glasgow with 2. Leinster have already secured that home quarter final. Montpellier need a big win over the leaders and for Exeter to slip up. Exeter will guarantee they finish above the French side if they get a bonus point at Glasgow, who are already out. And whichever team does finish second in Pool 3 will hope results elsewhere see them get through to the last 8. Breathe and discuss with Tom May and Emma Thurston. Starting with Montpellier-Leinster this weekend, Tom. Are Montpellier the one team which have been the biggest disappointment in the pool stages, considering the wealth of talent they have?
I think so. When you look at what they can do when they're really performing well, the physicality they show up front, combine that with the power and pace and the talent they have in their backs, you know, let's face it.
Nemani Nadolo has scored 6 tries, and they're still struggling to qualify. They're in third.
Yeah, I mean, in that game just gone, though, they hardly managed to get the ball to him. I did like their try, though, by the way. Just a sort of nonchalant chip up in the air from Mog. But, you know, I think they have been disappointing, and I think we would have expected more from them, having seen Vern Cotter come in with such a... And they started the season so well domestically. They just seem to have tailed off a bit.
I think it's interesting, Vern was talking at the beginning of the season about how much they still had to learn in this pool. And I remember speaking to him and thinking, you know, he's playing them down a bit. We're all thinking this Montpellier side are going to fly in this group and potentially top it. But actually, you know, he's knowledgeable enough to know that European rugby, it takes time to really find your feet in the competition. But as Tom said, how they started their domestic season, we would have thought they would have pressed on a little bit more.
And in Leinster, Tom, why are they making it look so easy? Because it's not. But they seem to be clicking through the gears and just improving week on week.
They were improving. And I think, you know, some of the performances we saw at the weekend, I thought Lowe was outstanding on the wing. But I also think we need to, you know, just make a point of the fact that Glasgow at times were bereft of any ideas. Their defence was fairly lackluster. They looked like a team that were long gone in this competition. And if you do that against one of the top sides, you'll get taken to the cleaners. And that's certainly what happened.
Emma, who's going to stop them?
That's a very good question. Potentially themselves. Did they have a ruthless enough streak when it came to the knockout stages last season? But a quarterfinal at the Aviva Stadium, a packed house, it's going to be tough to stop them this year, I think. They have to be favourites at this point in time.
I think so. And if you look at performances within the round phases, the consistency they've shown has been way better than any other sides that have been performing. There's always been a bit of a rubbish performance from your Clermont or Toulon or someone else that you would think, right, they're a pretty big hitter, but they're not competing on the same standards at the moment than Leinster are.
Well, there's one player who knows just how Leinster can click when they're in top gear. Mike McCarthy spent 4 seasons there and he joins us on the pod now. Mike, great to have you on.
Thanks very much for having me.
Tell us, I mean, how good are Leinster right now compared to all the years, say the last 10 years in Europe when they've been in their pomp, really? I mean, let's be honest, Leinster are one of the big European teams and frankly, they look as if they're going to deliver again this season.
Yeah, I think they're back to where they were before, you know, when they won the competition a good few times. When you look at the team, I think it's just the strength and depth in every position. They're just absolutely stacked. You know, for example, when you look at the game against Glasgow at the weekend, when you see Sir Jack McGrath starting a Lion, and then after 50 minutes, you've got Kian Healy coming on. So, you know, that can't be pleasant for teams. And it's like that in every position. You know, you've got Tadhg Furlong, Ian Porter coming on as well, and Dev Toner, Scott Fardy in the second row. You've got James Ryan, who's come through the academy, who Joe Schmidt capped before he actually played a Leinster game. And then when you look at the back row, so I'm just talking about forwards here, but we'll get to the backs eventually. But yeah, when you look at the back row, there's so much strength and depth in that back row. You saw last season, Dominic Ryan, who's been capped by Ireland, had to move to Leicester to get some game time. This season, it's Geordie Murphy, who's moving to Ulster. And if you think back, Geordie played in the historic win against the All Blacks. And then he got that injury, was out for about 9 months, and he's struggling to get into the team. So he's moving to Ulster next season to get game time. So I think it's just the absolute strength and depth. And then You know, you look at Stuart Lancaster coming in. He's had a great experience. Obviously, he's been there and done it. And then working with Leo. So all the players would have huge, huge respect for Leo. And Leo came into coaching straight from playing. And then, you know, he's slowly building up his experience. And he'd be so respected as one of the greatest club captains to have played. So hopefully they're not peaking too early. But, I mean, they're looking phenomenal.
Mike, you mentioned Stuart Lancaster. What specific differences has he brought to Leinster? I mean, they weren't as strong as they were, or they aren't as strong as they were, I wouldn't say, right now as they were a few years ago, but certainly he's added something since his arrival on the coaching team.
No, he definitely has. He's extremely professional. He's, I think a few players spoke about maybe perhaps after Joe Schmidt left and went to Ireland, maybe the culture kind of slipped a little bit. And Stuart came in last season. He didn't come in from the start of the season, so at least now this season he's had a whole pre-season with the players, and you know, he instills confidence in the lads, and he's very big about culture and, you know, getting the right people in. And he's added loads. I mean, I think Leinster's defence has improved massively. When you look at the games they play this season, they've brought a huge amount of line speed. When you look back to that game when they lost to Connacht in the final of the Pro 12, Leinster were defending with three guys in the backfield. So a big change that Stuart's brought in is having the two wingers up and having more numbers in the line, not putting as many players into the breakdown to compete for the ball, and you know, really ramping up that line speed. You know, that third defender starting opposite 10, really leading up the line speed and getting in the attackers' faces and frustrating them. And a lot of Leinster's tries do come from really good defence. You know, that line speed forcing the teams to make a mistake. I watched a game against Ulster at the RDS a couple of weeks ago, and line speed was really good, getting in their face. And a good few of the tries came from Ulster dropping the ball because they're under so much pressure. And then, you know, the speed of the back line. You've seen Jordan Larmour, some of the tries he scored. They've got some real pace and attacking flair in the back line.
You mentioned culture and how that slipped when Schmidt left. Just as a player, what does that specifically mean to, you know, to the listeners of the podcast, and how big an effect can that have and is clearly having for a side like Leinster?
Yeah, I don't think it's just culture, but I mean, you know, like when you look back at the success Leinster had under Joe, they had phenomenal success. And when you have phenomenal success, maybe you start to get a little bit too confident, and you know, starting to think that you maybe, not that you just have to turn up and you'll get the result, but maybe it took a couple of seasons to realise, you know, what were the foundations that got Leinster to where they were. And, you know, we're not talking about big changes, but culture, as you know, Tommy, from playing yourself, is a massive thing. If you've got the, you know, your senior players leading by example and everything they do, both on and off the pitch, it filters down to the young academy lads coming through. So, you know, that's not just like a light switch. You can't just turn it on. It takes time to build that and instill that. And Leinster were going very well last season with Stuart there, but maybe it took a little bit more time. They lost to Claremont, I think it was, in the semi, wasn't it? But very, very close game. They easily could have won it, and then well beaten at home in the against Scarlets in the Pro 12. So all signs this season are that they are in an absolutely fantastic position to kick on for the rest of the season.
Plenty of people are reacting on social media about Leinster as well. Mike Samuel Pigeons on Facebook says, "I reckon Leinster will reach the final. They're looking strong. Who is going to stop them, do you think?"
The problem is, as you get further into the season, you know, it just takes one slip up and it can be your season over. But as we said, their form is phenomenal and they're looking really strong. But when you look at the teams that they could be playing, I'm not sure if Saracens can still qualify. Claremont have been going very well until they lost to Northampton there. I know Claremont have got a good few injuries. But maybe Scarlets are a bit of a dark horse, because perhaps teams don't give them the respect that they deserve. But you saw that performance they put in against Bath at the weekend. Actually saying that, there's a player in the second row for Scarlets called Tyke Byrne, who was actually at Leinster. Just another example of the strength and depth. He was in the academy, was coming through, was training with us, and he actually got let go, went to Scarlets, and he's been their standout player. And everyone over here is talking him up to play for Ireland. He's moving back to Munster next season, so you know, that's very exciting for Munster to have him, and then Exeter as well. So there's plenty of quality teams there. You know, just hopefully on my side, Leinster can go all the way now.
Mike, thanks very much indeed. Spot on about Byrne as well. Of course, he demonstrated that against Bath, and enjoy watching Leinster perform again this weekend.
Brilliant. Thanks very much.
Mike McCarthy then, 4 years at Leinster in the second row. So Leinster we've discussed. What about Glasgow against Exeter, Tom May? Again, do you think Exeter had to prove to themselves that they deserve, in a sense, to be here? Because they too have kind of taken a while to get going. They've beaten Montpellier home and away, which is no mean feat. And yet, I almost felt they needed to convince themselves a bit more. And that home performance against Montpellier might have done that.
Yeah, I think so. And okay, Montpellier might not be the form side at the moment, but they still take some knocking over and they've got some names in their team. And you have to deal with what's in front of you right then. And I think the physicality they showed at the weekend, the dynamic nature of their play, the way that their backs really attacked the line, I thought Steenson showed some great touches, and obviously Woodburn's finishing was out of this world. They are capable. It's now kicking it on a bit so that actually that sort of capable one game here and there becomes a regular occurrence. And actually, you know, you don't have the 18-8 loss at home against Leinster. That doesn't happen. You get your home wins and then you go away and you beat Montpellier. Those are the fixtures that really stand out as you develop into a good European side.
What's happened to Glasgow in Europe, Emma?
That's a good question. What's happened to Glasgow? Dave Rennie pointed to the moments which they haven't got right in Europe. They've been able to navigate through them on a domestic front and not be punished for them so much, whereas in a European competition, you're punished. So I think they've been knocked off their stride on occasion during matches, and it's very difficult to claw it back.
I think the way they play as well, it's quite loose, and if that doesn't work...
Well, Scarlets play loose.
Yeah, they do play loose, but they've got a bit of a hard edge about them, and I'm not sure whether Glasgow have got that same hard edge that the Scarlets can turn to. So I think when that doesn't quite go right for Glasgow, that's when it really falls to pieces, like it did at the weekend.
And actually, if you compare those two sides, you know, Scarlet slipped up against Bath, didn't they, on that wet, miserable night, and they got outthought by Bath. But they have shown resilience, haven't they? And perhaps you haven't seen that resilience in Glasgow.
No, and I think they started the pool stages pretty poorly, didn't they? And then everything going so well domestically, maybe the focus changed, you don't know. But they have been pretty disappointed, I would think, by their performances. And I guess this home fixture at the weekend against Exeter is a time for them to actually put their hands up and say, OK, now we front up. It's the last one. You know, let's make a bit of a statement.
Let's look at the fixtures then. Saturday, the 20th of January, it's a 1 o'clock kickoff at GMT for Montpellier against Leinster Rugby at the Outfield Stadium, BN Sports and Sky Sports. And then Glasgow host Exeter at the Scotstoun Stadium, BT Sport and BN Sports. Predictions?
I am going to go for a Leinster win. Just, I think Montpellier are capable of a bonus point win. I just don't think they will. And I think we'll see Leinster's strength.
Emma?
Yeah, I agree. I think Leinster will win away. We'll see that strength in depth that we've all been talking about and we've seen over the last few weeks.
And then Tom on Glasgow, Exeter?
Simple. Exeter win, I think.
Emma?
Bonus point win for Exeter.
On to Pool 5, where Scarlets took a giant leap towards the Champions Cup quarterfinals with a stunning 35-17 bonus point victory over Bath at the Rec. This is what Scarlets captain Ken Owens said after the match.
We're a big game team and big game players step up, and I think a lot of boys stepped up tonight and put a shift in. You know, we were put under pressure in that second half by a very good Bath side. But, you know, I thought to a man, it was a great performance. We've got to turn up next week now, which is a cup final for us. We've got a slight advantage over Toulon, I think, because they play on Sunday and they've obviously got to travel. But, you know, it was half a job done. We're doing it the hard way in Europe at the moment. But, you know, we put ourselves in the chance of qualifying for the quarters. But it's cup final rugby. It's the final next weekend for us.
So it was a great Friday night for Scarlets as Ken Owens, but a hugely frustrating one for the Bath director of rugby, Todd Blackadder.
Oh, I think frustrating is an understatement. We had a great opportunity tonight, and this is what big games are all about. They're about executing your basics well, and you know, inconsistency usually comes from inconsistent preparation, but the preparation's been bang on, yet we're still getting really inconsistent performances. So we're so inconsistent that it has to be mental. We've got to address it.
Well, Toulon set up a mouth-watering Pool 5 finale against the Scarlets by securing a potentially crucial bonus point in their 36-0 win over Benetton. And so the table has Toulon top with 18, Scarlets on 17, Bath on 13, Benetton on 3. Toulon, Scarlets and Bath all still in contention. The winners of Scarlets-Toulon on Saturday go through as table toppers, but the losers could go out. And Bath need a 5-point win and several results to turn in their favour. So let's start with Scarlets against Toulon this weekend.
wow, where did that performance come from? No one was expecting it. Can they produce it a second week in a row?
I think they can. I think some of the performances they've put in have been outstanding. You know, you look at the players they've got. Steph Evans on the wing is outstanding for me, and he's key to everything that Scarlets do well. You know, we look at that fixture last weekend and we say, you know, they were brilliant. They scored that worldy length of the field try.
All Black-esque, wasn't it, really?
Yeah. But I think also, and you know, we can hear from Todd Blackadder's interview that I think he's focusing on the inconsistent nature of Bath and how that's really frustrating. Maybe that led to Scarlett's performance being sort of exacerbated and made to look slightly better than it was. It was an outstanding performance, and I do think they can do it again. I think what's key to that is Toulon's mentality and how they can shut them down.
Aaron Shingler, for me, a lot of people talked about the backs being live wires and full of freedom and aggression and ambition. But Shingler's handoffs and the work rate from him allowed those backs to play, didn't it, really, Tom? And I think in Shingler, one of these, like James Davis as well, perhaps not enough is said about those types of players because the old rules apply, don't they? The forwards need to do the hard yards first to allow the glory hunters like you to score the tries.
I think all backs understand that there's a reason why you're a back. You don't want to get stuck into the really hard work.
You don't have a fend-off from Aaron Shingler, do you?
No, I mean, you know, and he's outstanding. And Davis, how he doesn't get more of a look in at the Welsh international setup, I don't know, because he is outstanding. But having players like that defensively can be very, very destructive, but flip that on his head, offensively offer so much more than just trucking it up and carting it. If you've got players like that, you're basically adding another two centres to your 15. So I think, you know, that's a really good balance in between the backs and the forwards and a great way for those to link up.
Stephen Jones, and obviously Wayne Payback has been the man spearheading it, but Stephen Jones has been getting a lot of the praise too, Emma, hasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the thing with Scarlets is it's the enjoyment that they have with it as well, and that comes from Wayne Pivak and Stephen Jones, and not only all of the detail that they put into their game plan, it's the freedom they give their players and the fact that these players are enjoying it so much that I think this isn't just a one-off performance. We're going to see this game after game. I definitely think we're going to see this in round six against Toulon. There's so much for them and they're at home that we'll see the best of them.
Well, let's speak to a prop forward who played 45 times for the All Blacks and spent 5 years in France with Toulon. Welcome back to the show, Carl Heyman. Carl, great to have you back on the pod.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How do you see Pool 5 this weekend? Have Toulon got the defensive steel to stop the Scarlets?
I think so. You look at the squad, they've got, you know, the players to do anything on their day. But, you know, to be fair, the Scarlets have, you know, it's been a number of years now they've been playing a really good brand of rugby, attacking brand of rugby and putting a lot of teams under pressure. So, you know, I think Toulon obviously got the players to do it. It's going to be one heck of a matchup.
How will they try and prepare this week, Carl, in terms of shutting down that Scarlets attack? That's clearly the way that the Welsh side are going to try and take the game to Toulon.
I think it'll be a massive set piece target from Toulon. They'll really target the set piece in terms of disrupting the quality of ball, scrumming with Kruger, with his skill in the line out in terms of defensively. You know, I think that'll be a real big emphasis for them in terms of shutting down the Scarlets attack, and then afterwards just making sure they're well organised. Not sending too many numbers into the breakdown and then making good decisions around the breakdown, because, you know, against Scarlets and how well their attack is organised, you can pretty quickly find yourself in trouble if you're losing two or three guys in a breakdown where you don't need to or your structures aren't well set up.
Parky Scarlets this weekend is going to be heaving. Toulon have to play the occasion, don't they? And they probably have to slow the pace down, which, in a sense, it isn't something which comes naturally to them because they've got such an abundance of talent. But because Scarlets like this kind of controlled chaos in attack, is that something which Toulon are going to have to focus on a lot more this week?
Yeah, I think so. In terms of, you know, where they'll probably look to control is, you know, the dead time, the stoppage play, and making sure when there are restarts that they take ample time to restart the match to make sure that they fully recover and really control the tempo of the game. On the other hand, the Scarlets seem to make sure that there's a continued tempo in the game and they're going to really try and push the envelope. So I'll be interested to see tactically how that pans out, just with restarts and with, you know, injuries and things like that, and see, you know, what tactics Toulon take into slowing the play down.
And how difficult is that as a coach? Because clearly there's a strong reason for Toulon slowing the play down. But when you've got players like Redradra, Nonu, Ashton and Tuasova, there's an argument to say, well, let's try and speed it up.
Yeah, and then I guess that's a thing with Toulon. You're capable of doing everything. With the players they got, you know, I think the pace will be different for them in terms of the pace of the top 14 and compared to the Scarlets who play a very, very quick style of game. You know, but in saying that, it could be quite possible that Toulon go out and try and fight fire with fire and play as well. I think it's unlikely to a certain extent, but it is quite possible with the players they have amongst their squad.
And as a coach, Carl, can you give us a flavour of what it's like managing the permutations of this final weekend? It's easy to get distracted by them, isn't it?
Yeah, I think from a coaching point of view, I'm just talking from our situation here, but we're looking at mathematically who we might, with the other results in the other pools, of where we could possibly end up. But at the end of the day for us, and I imagine for a lot of the coaches, the performance in the weekend's the most important, you know, so just to do what we have to during the week to get our content right for our players, so when they get to the weekend that they're ready to go and they can perform to the best of their ability. This last weekend is often quite complicated because there's a lot of permutations around points and who needs a bonus point, and you know, they're important things to keep in mind, but from our point of view, the performance really takes priority.
And when it comes to this weekend, round six at Eton Poe in the Challenge Cup, obviously it's a Friday night trip to Kingsholm, a straight shootout for a home quarterfinal to top pool three. What are you expecting from the Cherry and Whites there, Carl?
Obviously a lot of, you know, a big power game and very solid pack, which we've looked at during the week. Yeah, we're expecting a really tough battle. Obviously, there's a lot to play for in terms of a home quarterfinal for both clubs for a number of reasons. A, to progress further in the competition, but, you know, obviously the incentives financially for the clubs. You know, for us, it'd be hugely important if we can get this win, just for where the club's at in terms of, you know, there's a new stadium just been built here. You know, we've had a couple of years in the top 14 and we've stayed up. This year, we're sort of pushing on to the top six and to have a match, have a quarter final at home, you know, would mean a lot. It'd be quite significant in terms of where we are in a club, as a club at this stage.
Carl, thanks once again for coming on the pod. Good luck this weekend against Gloucester.
Thanks, guys.
Carl Heyman, former All Black, who spent 5 years in France with Toulon. What about Benetton against Bath then, Tom? Todd Blackadder has been talking about inconsistency virtually all season. He says their warm-up, their preparation is good, but something's going wrong because they cannot deliver week in, week out.
He must be pulling his hair out. And really, if it's a mental thing, it's a lot longer as a process to try and fix that, because you really have to dig deep into the mindset of the players and actually what's the little detail, because that's all it'll be, a little detail that is just offsetting their performances.
Well, Mike Ford came on the pod, didn't he, a few weeks ago, and talked about all the work he did psychologically with players to make sure this didn't happen.
But he also talked about the little bits you do week in, week out in the preparation, and Blackadder's highlighted that they're on point. So to try and really focus in on a player's mindset shows you how much importance needs to be placed on sports psychology and all those sorts of things.
What did you do as a player?
Just got on with it.
You didn't do any sort of mental preparation?
I did. You do a bit of visualisation. I think I spent more of that time on the bus, actually, on the way to the game, thinking about things I would try and do well and how I'd like to see the performance going. I didn't necessarily have the concentration to be able to do that during the week building up to it. I made sure I did all my little bits. So I had a diary that I needed to check off various different parts of my preparation to say, right, that's all in place, done that. If I missed out on doing something, then I would have to try and get that in later in the week to make sure that, you know, mentally I felt in a good place to be taking on the opposition.
How disruptive has the whole Matt Banahan situation been, do you think?
I don't reckon it's that much of a distraction to the other players. They know that players are moving on. They've probably known for quite a while. You know, I think it's probably been a distraction, but it's part of professional sport now. No matter what sport you're involved in, there are always players that have spent a long time at clubs, you know, moving on. And yes, he's been fantastic for Bath, but now's the right time for him to move.
Have Bath got enough to be in the quarterfinals?
Not at the moment. I don't think they've had the consistency that you're needed to have, you know, during those early rounds that requires you to get out of those pools, and you look at the other sides and how they have been playing, you're not quite sure what Bath will serve up. Now, okay, this weekend they're coming up against Benetton, and probably mentally that will put them in a better place. I would think they'll get a five-pointer, bear in mind over the past two rounds, Benetton have only scored 12 points. It's a good fixture for Bath to end on, but I think it's all going to fall back to last weekend's result.
Saturday, the 20th of January, then 5:30 kickoff GMT for Benetton against Bath at the Stadio Comunale di Mondio on Eurosport Player, BT Sport, and beIN Sports. And then Scarlets against Toulon at Parky Scarlets on Sky Sports and beIN Sports. Predictions. We'll start with you, Emma.
Bonus point win for Bath away. And I think Scarlets will beat Toulon. I'm debating on the bonus point there.
Bath away win with a bonus point. I'm going to go out there and back my old side and say Toulon will nick a win in Wales.
What are the fans saying on social media, Emma?
Well, Hugh Williams, he picks Scarlet as an outside bet to win the Champions Cup this year. But he also gives a mention to Leinster at Champions Cup on Twitter and at European Rugby Champions Cup on Facebook. So many comments, a lot of them about Scarlet, and keep them coming through all through the week and into the round six match weekend.
Next on the EPCR European Rugby Show, we'll talk about Champions Cup pools 1, 2 and 4.
This is the EPCR European Rugby Show with James Burridge, Tom May and Emma Thurston.
Next, we'll talk about Pool 2, which Northampton Saints shook up by defeating leaders Clermont Auvergne 34-21 at Franklin's Gardens. The other match in Pool 2, a real shock there as well. Owen Farrell and Dan Bigger are kicking Saracens and Ospreys to a 15-all stalemate at the Liberty. And so the table looks like this, with Clermont Auvergne top with 18, Ospreys on 15, Saracens on 13, Northampton on 6. A draw for Clermont will see them top the pool. An Ospreys win in France would definitely send the Welsh side through and put the holders Saracens out. Almost unthinkable at the beginning of the tournament. Saracens need a bonus point win over Northampton, and they need help elsewhere. And Tom May, I mean, we just would never have expected Saracens to not be in the knockout stages.
No, it's incredible, isn't it? And I guess it shows the strength of the competition and how that's developed and improved, certainly this year. I mean, that last round of results were outstanding in terms of the random nature of everyone's saying, you know, this team's going to win. And
well, you talk about, you know, putting your money on this, putting your money on that. You would never have put your money on Northampton.
Yeah, I talk about it. I never actually did it.
Well, you would never have thought Northampton could have blown Clermont away like that.
No, and maybe that's the threat of you know, the underdog, the team that's out. Okay, I've written off Glasgow this weekend, but they've got nothing. They've got nothing to play for, so that makes them pretty dangerous.
Well, let's hear from Thomas Castagnier, the former French international. He gives us his take on Saracens' campaign after a few thoughts about the pool leaders.
I was really, really surprised by Clermont. You know, did really well against Saracens in the last few games, but now they struggle in the championship. They got so many injuries, so it's going to be hard for them to cope with the level of the Champions Cup. I'm a Saris, you know. So when they got the key players, you know, they're still there. It's very hard, you know, when you miss, you know, these tremendous players. Of course, they are like technically over everyone's, but they are, you know, they bring in terms of leadership, about charismatic, you know. So they're still able to do something, but it's going to be difficult to qualify. I just hope they will, because I'm a big fan, and the first results, you know, that I follow, of course, in the English Championship were all the time Saracens. Against Toulouse or Castres, you know, it's not the same because I've played there, but I will support Saracens.
And we'll hear Castagnier's reflections on winning the inaugural European Cup with Toulouse back in January 1996 in one of our knockout stage episodes. Let's look ahead then to, first of all, Clermont against the Ospreys. Tom May, on Clermont, we know they've got injury problems, but are they actually struggling more with expectation?
I think it's probably all been set off by the injuries, and then there's a bit of self-doubt that's come into it, and then, oh no, it's Europe. That said, I think the players they had on the field at the weekend were capable of turning over Northampton, especially with the position that they find themselves in right now. A really disappointing and surprising result, you know, for Clermont. But that, unfortunately, I think for the Ospreys, means that they might get payback on the weekend. I can't see anything less than a bonus point win for Clermont this weekend, being really strong at home.
Emma, we talked about teams struggling at the start of the tournament. Ospreys are your prime example of this. They lost their opening two rounds. They've come marching straight back into it.
They have. And for Ospreys, their domestic season has been challenging as well. But they've found some form and they've used the Champions Cup to do it. Now, the Stade Marcel Michelin, of all of the places to go and need to get a result, I'd say that's the most challenging. I think Tom's going to agree with me on that.
I'd say it is the challenging, but there are weaknesses there. There's opportunity there.
But also, they'll get on your back, won't they? If Clermont are underperforming, French crowds, they're quick to praise, but they're quick to point out when they're not happy about things.
Yeah, and I think that's what the Ospreys have to try and do, is just shut that down from a spectator's perspective. First job, make that crowd silent. Second job, get them on the back of Clermont.
How do they beat Clermont at the Stade Marcel? Because they will be a totally different beast, won't they?
Yeah, and you have to stop a French side getting a rumble on, and that's very, very difficult when you see the size of the objects rumbling towards you. The players they've got at their disposal, okay, they're missing Raka, the likes of him, and a lot of their key players in that position at 10, but Abandonin's still there. They've still got quality in Toyava. I think when they're on form, they're one of the toughest teams to stop because they can batter you, but at the same time, they just go round you.
So what did Northampton find? They found a number of Clermont weaknesses, didn't they?
Yeah.
What can Ospreys take from that Northampton victory?
If you're a tight, close-knit unit that, you know, you're desperate for that win, that almost looked like Clermont didn't really fancy it.
That was almost a cliche of French teams playing away, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that's what you have to unpick, because that's disappeared slightly now. It's not the whole, French teams are travelling, that's a guaranteed win. It doesn't happen like that anymore. But it's still there if you dig deep enough, if you really get into them and you take the game to them. And it's all about self-doubt. We talked about sports psychology.
Well, do Ospreys believe, do you think?
I think they have to. And why not? You know, what a better place to go and play in Clermont and say, right, you know, this is a massive opportunity for us. You, when you play in sides and you go away to, I remember with Northampton, we went away to the Kingspan Stadium. We beat Ulster. And now that stands out in my mind as a fixture that, you know, that's something that'll hold with me, because there's not many people that go over there and do that. So Ospreys have that opportunity.
What about Saracens then against Northampton this weekend? No, Billy Funapola, who's only just come back. And that's just going to be a massive, massive hole to fill, isn't it?
It is, and you have to feel sorry for him. I mean, it was a fairly innocuous thing that ended up taking him from the field, but the pickups that he was making from the base of the scrum and the yardage he was just hauling half the team along with him. You know, he's a frightening prospect when he's on form, but and disappointing for Saracens. But, you know, we talk about strength and depth that Leinster have. Well, you know, they've got Jackson Ray, Rhodes, Callum Clark. You know, they've got some great players to fill in those spots.
I think there's an element of shell shock at Sarries right now, isn't there, about the fact that they are where they are right now?
In this competition, yes. I think injuries have played their part, and none of us would have predicted that come round six, Saracens would be not in a pole position to qualify. They need to do everything that they can and then need to look elsewhere, I believe. For the back-to-back champions, that is a strange situation to be in. But I think for them this weekend, as Tom said, they're going to have to focus on their performance. They're going to have to put bonus point against Northampton, which will be a challenge in itself, with Northampton off the back of such a big result against Clermont, with the changes that Northampton have had. They will fancy this game going to Allianz Park, despite the record there, which I don't believe theirs is too strong. They will know that they could do something, and that will really incentivise them. So it's a tricky one for Saracens.
For Saracens, I think the key is that, you know, they have to get a bonus point against Northampton. Now, if there's one side that's capable of doing that and having the mindset of going, right, get the win, now we go and get the bonus point, it is Saracens. And it's interesting, that Toulon Scarlets game's got repercussions way down into these English teams. Now, my maths is horrendous, so I'll hold my hand up if I've got this wrong, but Exeter Chiefs, Saracens and Bath could all end up on the same points. But if Scarlets don't win, and if Ospreys don't do anything in Clermont, then those three teams then become very much into the fray for those quarterfinal positions, and it's only going to be one of them.
And if Saracens don't make the quarterfinals, it'll be the first time they've failed to do that since the 2012-2013 season. What does it say about English clubs in Europe this season? It's a subject we've talked about in previous podcasts, but English teams have struggled. It might be Exeter get there, but They are few and far between.
Look, I think Saracens have... There's two things that combine. The injuries have combined for Saracens to hit them at unfortunate times, and they found themselves in a pool where actually the Ospreys weren't...
They weren't as bad as everyone thought they were going to be.
You know, they've been struggling in their domestic competition, and actually you almost thought, well, that'll be Saints and Ospreys at the bottom. Whereas Saracens are now thinking, oh, this Ospreys lot have caused us a bit of a painful few rounds here. I think there's a case of some sides being caught out. You look at Montpellier, Exeter, Glasgow and Leinster. Exeter potentially in a similar situation.
You'd rather be Exeter, though, than Saracens right now.
Oh, 100%. Bath had an opportunity and probably blew it at home last week. What other sides would there be? Wasps, they'll probably be disappointed, but they can point the finger at injuries as well. So I don't think that English rugby's been left behind. I think it's probably one of those sort of years where just things haven't quite gone right.
Let's look at the fixtures then. Saturday, the 20th of January in this pool, 3:15 GMT kickoff. Saracens against Northampton at Allianz Park on BT Sport and BN Sports. And then Clermont Auvergne against the Ospreys at the Stade Marcel Michelin on BN Sports and BT Sport. Emma, where do you think these two games are going to go?
Clermont victory at the Stade Marcel Michelin with the bonus point. Think for Clermont. Saracen Saints is a difficult one, an away victory.
Tom,
wow.
that's perhaps the worst thing I've ever said on the podcast.
I mean, that is not a result. So I'm going to go for two home bonus point wins.
Excellent. Thank you very much. To pool one, where Ulster boosted their qualification chances with a 20-13 victory over La Rochelle, leapfrogging the French side at the top. And Harlequins, well, what a game this was. They rallied from 28-12 down to win 33-28 against Wasps in a ferocious encounter, a real comeback. Afterwards, I spoke to the Quins director of rugby, John Kingston.
I had an odd feeling, actually, when we scored the third try at 28-19. I could just sense we were coming for them.
You had a real sense of momentum there in that final 10, didn't you? You were unstoppable.
Yeah, I thought so at the end of the first half as well. The crowd feed off the team. There was a big, big crowd there tonight. Atmosphere was fantastic under the lights. We've got huge spirit in the group and togetherness, and we believe in what we're about, and we're working really hard, and we do work really hard, and we're not prepared to roll over. And it was important for us to show integrity and take this competition right to the end, and we'll do the same next week.
It was a crushing defeat, though, for Wasps. At one point, I said they were 28-12. They were 21-0 up earlier in the game. Here's their director of rugby, Di Young.
They made some real poor errors to allow them a little bit of field position, a little bit of momentum. And defensively then, far too easy for them to score tries. But we've been like that the last month, and, you know, we were in games, us scoring five and them scoring four, and there was always going to be a case of that's going to catch up with us, and they caught up with us today. But hugely disappointed. We certainly didn't demonstrate enough fight in defence, really, to protect our line.
So, pool one looks like this. Ulster top with 17, La Rochelle a point behind with 16, Wasps with 12, Harlequins with 7, and a bonus point win for Ulster guarantees top spot. The same for La Rochelle. We'll see them progress to the last eight, and 4 points could be enough for them. Wasps, they need a miracle in many ways here. They could still sneak through to the quarterfinals. Harlequins are already out. Wasps against Ulster then, first off, Tom May. We've talked about mental strength in games. I mean, that was a disintegration by Wasps.
Yeah, and that's a sure sign that there isn't that much mental strength to try and defend a 21-0 lead against a side that's not even in the competition, really. They're not in the races.
Too much complacency, or is it more than that?
I think it's easy when you get out to 21-0 to think, oh, you know, we've got this. You obviously don't consciously think that, but that's just the way it happens. And then one or two things go against you. Quins drag themselves back into the game. Those little bits of self-doubt. And then actually, you're fighting against a team that again have nothing to lose and can chuck caution to the wind and just throw everything at it. And you know, a fantastic win for Quins. But really, Wasps have cost themselves dearly, because if they'd won that, they'd be right up there alongside Racing with a home fixture against Ulster at the Ricoh Arena to try and qualify for the last eight.
And you've mentioned injuries. Yes, they were an issue. There was no Elliot Daly, there was no Goppeth, there was no Nathan Hughes. But they had that game. And actually, injuries didn't play a part, really.
No.
I don't think Di Young can use the injuries excuse. And in fairness to him, I'm not sure he is.
No, and I think, you know, that was early stages, wasn't it, of this season, where they were just shorn of loads of players. I do think they miss Daly and Goppeth specifically. I think they can cover up for Hughes. But, you know, I think that's a case of a bit of complacency and not enough focus.
And a key moment for me, having commentated on it, watching it, was Joe Simpson. They were counting the clock down about 77 minutes. And you could see them going through the phases, pick up around the rucks, counting the clock down. And you thought, can they do this for 3 minutes? And not many teams can, in fairness. And then Joe Simpson decided to box kick clear. And then you just think, oh, my goodness, what have you done? Because you're just kicking to anyone's back three. That's dangerous, isn't it? Because suddenly your whole back line has to reorganise. And if you are a team having to defend a lead, do you train for holding a lead, holding possession for 4 or 5 minutes? Because actually, if they kept hold of the ball, Wasps, they would have won that game.
Yeah, and probably kicking is the worst option. You just hand the opposition the ball back. You're better off going to your fly half and just going long as you can, and then trying to get your kick chase up organised. I guess the problem is with a box kick, you can get your kick chase organised, but it's a lot harder because the ball's going to land a lot closer to your line. I think, if the ball goes long, gives yourselves an opportunity. If you're going to turn the ball over, I would have just kept the ball in hand. Just say, right, let's just try and bore them to death.
Emma, what about Ulster? A terrific win over La Rochelle. In the last few days, though, Tommy Bowes announced he's going to be retiring at the end of the season. So there's going to be an emotional element to this next game. And hopefully, from an Ulster perspective, it won't be their last. They'll make the quarters.
Yeah, there will be an emotional perspective. I think he's been immense for them. And it was an emotional fixture at home anyway. Christian Leliofano's last home game. It will be his last game for them before he leaves. So I think that will add to an Ulster side. They needed that victory at home and they got it. I thought Rory Best was immense as their captain. So the emotion will travel with them. And I'm expecting Les Kiss's side to travel well at the Ricoh Arena.
It's going to be a tricky one for them, Tom, because Wasps are going to be hurting. They've got to deliver a performance. Ulster have to win.
Yeah, and I think that will be the difference. I think Ulster they've fought hard to be in the position they're in. They find themselves fourth, I guess, in the rankings at the moment.
Well, they're a different team away from home, aren't they? It's a cliche, but they're nowhere near the side they are when they play at the Kingspan.
Yeah, but when there's so much at stake, when there's so much riding on it, I think there's enough hard edge and mental focus within that Ulster squad to get them over the line. Wasps, I think they'll be really hurting, but I think they would have also, taken a lot of wind out of their sails that loss at the Stoop last weekend.
What about La Rochelle against Harlequins then? Everyone's probably expecting 5 points, but then again, I think everyone thought Wasps would get 5 points against Harlequins. What lessons did La Rochelle need to learn when they play the Quins this weekend?
Well, like John Kingston said, that they're going to fight to the end. They're not going to lie down. That said, I would expect La Rochelle to turn up and to really put on a show, and I do expect that to be a home bonus point win.
Have they lost their spark, La Rochelle?
No.
Even though they haven't been as convincing.
Yeah, I just think teams have, they're aware now of what a dangerous side they are. The spark's still there. The ambition is still there. It's just a way that other teams are very aware and defensively of what is going to be thrown at them. So you have to be capable of covering those areas.
And is it simply that they're shutting them down quicker and stopping that sense of momentum?
Yeah, you can't afford them any space. But you also have to change your defensive system. Not the system entirely, but your defenders need to be aware of their offloading game. Therefore, you follow in those support runners. You can't just let them just come through the gaps either side of those individual defenders. Those outside and inside guys have to be aware of the other players around.
Let's look at the fixtures then. Sunday the 21st of January, 3:15 GMT. La Rochelle against Harlequins at the Stade Marcel de Flandre on FR2, Sky Sports and beIN Sports. Wasps against Ulster at the Ricoh Arena on BT Sport and beIN Sports. Emma, two wonderful games to finish this pool with. Where are you going with these?
An away victory for Ulster at the Ricoh Arena. Home victory for La Rochelle. Bonus points for both.
I'm going to go with a bonus point win for La Rochelle and just a 4-point normal win. Normal win for Ulster.
Normal wins. Normal have you had win. Many normal wins?
You win a few matches,
didn't you? A win's a win.
A win
is a win.
Shame goes down as a W.
Shame you didn't have many.
Oh.
In pool four.
I have in the fancy league.
In pool four, Racing 92 secured a 34-30 victory over leaders Munster. Maxi Machiner scoring 19 points in the first European match at the brand new U Arena. Tom, just on that, before the sides even came out, what did you think of the sense of theatre there?
Envy. Oh, to play in a place like that is just unreal.
That screen.
I was there.
Yeah.
That screen is ridiculous.
I mean, it's what a place to play. The whole light show is worth turning up for itself.
It was really good. I was there and the music and the sound, it felt very epic. And this screen is huge. As a kicker, it must be a bit disconcerting kicking towards it.
Does look a bit odd. Looks like you're kicking against the wall.
Well, it looks like you're going to the cinema.
Yeah, but it's outstanding.
What cinema are you going to?
Well, one where they play rugby. But seriously, some people are not fans of playing indoors. Did you ever play indoors as a player?
No, I mean, the closest I got would be the Millennium Stadium, but I still don't think you say that's indoors. I just think you say it's got the roof shut. That is genuinely indoors.
But the U Arena is definitely an indoor stadium.
Yeah, I don't think many
players... Don't you think the dynamic's different?
Well, I don't know, I've not done it. and I don't think many players have done it, and I think that's the thing.
Does it affect them?
Yeah, so until you get used to it... I know for a fact that Racing have been up there training and using it to their advantage, I guess, because there's no doubt when you get there, you're like, wow.
I think Munster handled it well, though. They didn't look overawed by this brand new arena, the indoor setting. They were very focused and had their heads in the game. So it wasn't a huge factor, but it is impressive. And it'll be interesting to see which teams then are overawed by it.
Leicester, they had a shocker, didn't they? They went down 39-0 to Castres in France. Let's run you through the pool four standings. Munster top with 16, Racing 92 with 15, Castres on 12, Leicester out of it on 6. And 4 points for Munster will see them top the pool, but they may not have a home quarter final. It'll depend on other results. Only a Racing 92 win at Welford Road would give them enough reason to cross their fingers about results elsewhere. Castres are struggling. Leicester, as I mentioned, are out. So let's start with Munster against Cast. A lot of people will look at this one, Tom, and think it's a foregone conclusion.
I think it is a foregone conclusion. I think Munster, I think they're really strong this year. I think Cast have performed really well. And obviously that weekend result where they nilled Leicester. You know, I think they've been a pain in this pool. I think that's the best way to describe them. I think my old mate Joel Abd, who's coaching there, has done fantastically well down there. And I think they'll go at Munster, there's no doubt. But I'm not sure they've got the European experience to topple them at Tomen Park.
So how far off their all-court game are they, Munster, right now?
I don't think they're far. They're fast moving towards where they were and where they have been. From an outside perspective, it's very easy to go, right, that they're playing amazingly at the moment and there's no way that they can get any better. As a side, Munster will certainly, if you spoke to any of the players or the coaching, they would say, right, our game's in a pretty good place, but actually we can improve these specific areas that they would have highlighted and see where they feel they're being unpicked a bit. I just think the way they are playing, especially at home, I think it'll be far too much for Cast.
They don't look as threatening as Leinster, though, Emma, Munster at the moment. But I suppose they've got time.
Exactly, not at this moment in time. Johan van Graal said afterwards that he's pleased with how they're building. And the quarterfinals, obviously, we all know when they are. They're April. So there's plenty of time for Munster to progress through. I suppose the interesting dynamic for them is if they don't get a home quarterfinal at Tokeman Park and they go away from home, what dynamic does that put on should they progress through?
Let's talk about Leicester against Racing 92. Our friend Nakarawa leads the carries and the offload stats with 79 and 16 respectively. I mean, he's just a one-man mountain, isn't he? How
ridiculous.
Critical, though, is he to their chances?
I think he just adds X factor to a Racing side that at times are pretty frustrating because you think they should be showing a huge amount of quality all the time because they've got a vast array of talent to call upon. But Nakarawa, he is key to that. I'm not sure there's too many people that are shouting from the stands, from the coaching department, keep two hands on the ball. When he's got one hand on the ball, that's when he's at his biggest threat. He gets through the contact well. And, spoke before about how defenders have to react to different types of players. When he's on the ball, you've got all sorts of different problems facing you.
What about Leicester, Emma? They've had a really torrid season.
This European season is not what they expect themselves and clearly their fans as well. Back at Welford Road, there is nothing to play for when it comes to the group, but there is everything to play for when it comes to building towards the next rounds domestically, the pride in the competition, and they really will want to pull their socks up at home and just finish with a positive statement away from home against Castres. I mean, it wasn't great.
Tom, a lot of people at the start of the season saw Leicester's back line and were kind of salivating over it, but they haven't been about the pack. And do you think that's actually borne out now that that pack just isn't nasty enough? And you do need that balance, don't you, from 1 to 15?
Yeah, I think they need to get back to having what I would amiably term a horrible pack, because that's what gives you the bite up front. It allows your backs to play. Now, you know, you mentioned those backs. Well, half of them haven't been playing. And I think that's another, that's again been a problem. We spoke about why the English clubs haven't necessarily performed, but all the ones that haven't performed have really struggled with either inconsistencies or injury. So they'll be really disappointed with this. I don't see this weekend going too flash for them either. I think Racing will turn up with a lot to play for. You know, it's key for them. Lorenzetti's made huge investments into the new stadium, into his playing squad. He wants
some bang for his buck, doesn't he?
Exactly. There's no falling over at the last hurdle. You don't get that opportunity. I think this weekend will be the end of what has been an ugly competition for Leicester.
So the fixtures, Sunday the 21st, 1 o'clock kickoff GMT, Munster against Castres Olympique at Toman Park on Sky Sports and BN Sports, Leicester against Racing 92 at Welford Road on Sky Sports and BN Sports. Emma, your predictions?
Bonus point win for Munster, away win for Racing.
I'm going to go for two bonus point wins, one for Munster and one for Racing.
Now don't forget, you'll be able to find highlights via championscuprugby.com and the EPCR's social media channels. The spotlights on Glasgow and Scotland's Stuart Hogg before the end of the show. But next, we'll look at the European Rugby Challenge Cup.
I'm Rory Best, and you're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
Next, we'll take a look at the European Rugby Challenge Cup. Some interesting results. Tom, I look at Toulouse this season, who have been really disappointing in Pool 2, haven't they? They're rock bottom. Cardiff beating them 18-13. Toulouse were a huge beast in Europe, and in the Challenge Cup this season, they've fallen way off the base.
Yeah, I think that's probably down to the focus they've given the competition, and that can be the frustrating thing, I think, with some of the French side. If they're not in the Champions Cup, the focus they give to the Challenge Cup perhaps hasn't been as good as it can be. That said, it's great to see teams like Pau and Bordeaux really competing at the top of those pools, because we need those French sides to be playing well.
Emma, a number of teams have already qualified for the quarters as well.
Yeah, so six clubs are through to the quarterfinals: Edinburgh, Pau, Newcastle Falcons, Connaught, Cardiff Blues and Gloucester Rugby. Edinburgh and Newcastle have both guaranteed home quarterfinals. And as we mentioned with Carl Heyman, the winner of Friday's Pool 3 shootout between Gloucester and Pau will also secure a home match in the last eight. So the pitch is a bit clearer in the Challenge Cup than it is in the Champions Cup.
And we've had combined attendances, haven't we, in the Champions Cup and Challenge Cup. They're going to go through the 1 million mark this season during round six, so plenty of people watching both tournaments. Tom, any matches particularly for you which stand out? Obviously the Gloucester Pau, I think you're going to that one, aren't you? So
yeah,
we can see how the Cherry and Whites get on.
Heading down to that to go and support Carl, actually, and his team for Pau. I think that's an interesting... I think Worcester, there's probably a chance for them to qualify if they go away to Bree. That's a massive fixture for them. How do Newcastle face up against NSI away in Tbilisi? You know, they've qualified. What do they do with their squad? There's some big games in this competition.
Time for another Champions Cup Q&A. Injuries have kept Stuart Hogg out of much of Glasgow Warriors' campaign, but we'd still like to get to know him better.
Describe yourself in three words.
Cheeky, confident, mischievous.
Which non-rugby sports star would you want on your team?
Oh, I'd love to play with David Beckham. He's an absolute legend and icon. So yeah, I'd love to have him on my team.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
It's just the classic one, to go out and enjoy. You know, for me, if you're not putting up with a smile on your face, then you're in the wrong sport.
What can't you live without?
My phone. My wife would kill me if I didn't say my phone. Yeah, I seem to go on it a hell of a lot.
What would your job be if you weren't a rugby player?
I have absolutely no idea.
Which European match would you want to play again?
I would love to play against Saracens again, quarter-final from last year. I think, you know, we might have got a couple of bits and pieces wrong throughout the game, so to be in a position to right the wrongs, I think would give us a good opportunity.
Which luxury item would you want if you were stranded on a desert island?
Bottle Iron Brew. Should I probably have said my wife or what?
And which teammate would you want with you on the island?
Teammate, I would take our skipper Ryan Wilson, an incredibly funny guy, and he would keep me in high spirits.
Who inspired you growing up as a rugby player?
Probably my parents and my brother as well. You know, my dad played rugby, he was a professional referee, and my brother, who's 5 years older, he played Scotland age grade and Scotland seven, so we got to travel the world with him, and that was the reason why I wanted to be a rugby player.
the dark side of Stuart Hogg. He likes an iron brew. Would Glasgow...
I hope his wife doesn't download the podcast this week.
Would Glasgow have been a different team had he been playing?
I think they probably may have scored a few more tries, but I think probably their weaknesses lie within the squad as opposed to having one more player back.
Well, next on the EPCR European Rugby Show, it's this.
I'm Isuna Siwa, and I'll be playing fantasy rugby on championscuprugby.com.
It's time to check on our fantasy rugby performance. I think the key phrase there is "are." I don't really want anyone to focus on my fantasy rugby
performance. We're all taking Tom's, aren't we?
I don't think we can focus on yours. Do you have to scroll right down to the bottom?
I think we'll just quickly move on and say, who are you going to brag about this week, Tom May?
So I actually hadn't changed a couple of my players for quite a while. I've used the triple point week thing. So I've put that on Farrell. So he's my captain, my kicker, and he gets triple points. So I'm just going to clean you up this week as well, James. And then I've put Watson in, and I've taken, I can't remember who had it at scrum half, but Chris Cook's in. And Chris Cook put on his Instagram last night, he was in an air boot, and I have got no more transfers to make.
Well, to give you an example of how unlucky I've been, I had Joe Marler in my front row.
Excellent.
And I switched having Billy Vunipena as my number 8.
Oh, brilliant.
I am a selection.
Hence your last.
Yes, exactly. Emma, we should remind everybody, we go to championscuprugby.com to get your team, first of all. If you're playing the classic version of fantasy rugby, that's what we're talking about, obviously. But you can play the daily fantasy rugby as well.
Yes, you can. So it's 7 aside for each individual match day. And I've been having a little look at this for Saturday. See what you guys think of these selections. Nemanja Nadolo, 6 tries, 5 games. Figure he's a good bet. Farrell, like you, Tom, I've gone with goal kicking, plenty of points. Don Armand from Exeter Chiefs. You get more points if a forward scores a try. So he's gone in there. Gareth Davies from Scarlets, 4 tries so far. And I think Scarlets, huge game. He could snipe around Toulon. Morgan Parra to keep the scoreboard ticking along. Zach Mercer over in Italy. And Ollie Woodburn for the finishing.
That is quite a squad. How can you afford all that?
Well, there's no budget. So I can buy, in inverted commas, whichever players I would like from a match day from whichever clubs. So they are my 7.
Before we go, a reminder of what you can see across a wonderful weekend of Champions Cup rugby on the 20th and 21st of January.
Saturday.
Round 6 kicks off at 1 o'clock in Scotland and 2 o'clock French time with the conclusion of Pool 3. Leinster are through already and they go to Montpellier, who still have slim quarterfinal hopes.
You can watch that on BN Sport and Sky Sports Action.
Meanwhile, Exeter will try and secure their knockout stage place against Glasgow at Sandy Park.
On BT Sport 3 and BN Sports.
Next up are the final matches in Pool 2 at 3.15 GMT and 4.15 CET. Leaders Clermont host Ospreys on BN Sports and BT Sport 2.
While Saracens face Northampton Saints on BT Sport 3 and BN Sports, can Saris find a result that extends their title defence?
And Saturday evening is crunch time for those in Pool 5. The top two go head-to-head in Wales with Scarlets against Toulon.
The last time the Scarlets got through was when I was a really young 19-year-old, and a lifetime ago, it seems. And the size driving factor this year is to make a statement in Europe. Are we good enough to go all the way? I don't know. But we put ourselves in a good spot by winning next week. We'll qualify for the quarters and then we'll take it game by game, hopefully. But it's cup final rugby now every weekend, and that's what we want to be involved. We want to be in with a shot of qualifying, which we haven't been in for a long time.
You can see Ken Owens and Scarlets host Leaders Toulon at 5.30 local time on Sky Sports Action and BN Sports.
And at the same time, Bath are in Italy to play Benetton.
Catch the action from Treviso on the Eurosport Player, BT Sport 3 and BN Sports.
Sunday.
Pool 4 is decided with 2 matches that kick off at 1 o'clock GMT. Leaders Munster host Castra on Sky Sports Action and BN Sports.
While Racing go to Leicester on Sky Sports Arena and BN Sports.
And the final matches of the Champions Cup pool stage kick off at 3.15 GMT and 4.15 CET.
Ulster Rugby go to Wasps, looking to hold on to top spot in Pool 1.
And you can watch that on BT Sport 2 and BN Sports.
While La Rochelle are trying to firm up their last 8 spots with a win against Harlequins.
And that's on FR2, Sky Sports Action and BN Sports.
And that's your weekend sorted. 10 great matches in Round 6 of the European Rugby Champions Cup. We asked you to let us know which quarter-final matchups you'd like to see in the Champions Cup. Emma has some of your replies.
Pat O'Donoghue says Munster against anyone. Aaron Weston would like a home Munster quarter-final. And then we had some discussion around Ricky Harris said Scarlet against Ospreys, but was quickly pointed out by Andy, who said that means a Welsh team definitely goes out. So let's save that fixture for the final.
All to play for this weekend, Tom May. Which match do you think is going to be the one which we're going to all be salivating on this weekend? Because there were just so many in the last weekend.
There are. I just think there's so much riding on the Scarlets-Toulon game, not only from those two teams, but for a lot of other teams that are looking up saying, well, this needs to happen for us to get through. So I think that's the fixture. And do Bath have enough to get through?
What about Sarries? Do you think they can make the quarterfinals?
Well, again, it depends on what's happening at the top of the table. But you know, certainly they're not going to let that opportunity slip. They need to be in that position to make sure that if it does come their way, they're there and waiting.
Emma, what about you?
I have to say, I'm looking forward to the whole weekend. We'll have lots of as-it-stands tables throughout the weekend. Things will change.
It's a nightmare, isn't it, this final weekend? I mean, let's not lie about it.
It's tough.
It chops and changes so much.
It's tough, but it's why we love it.
That's all we've got time for on the EPCR European Rugby Show. Don't miss those 10 big matches in round 6 of the Champions Cup throughout Saturday the 20th and Sunday the 21st of January. Go to championscuprugby.com for all the news and stats and to play both classic and daily fantasy rugby. Keep your messages coming. It's at Champions Cup and at ER Challenge Cup on Twitter, as well as the Champions Cup and Challenge Cup Facebook pages. And remember, you can find match highlights at championscuprugby.com as well as via the EPCR's social media channels. We'll be back in the knockout stages with a preview of the quarterfinals on Tuesday the 27th of March. But for now, from Tom May, Emma Thurston and myself, James Burridge, enjoy the rugby.